Hello and welcome to At The Cafe, a podcast by the Anarchist Communist Group taking a look at what's happening in the UK through an anarchist communist lens. A little bit about us, we're a revolutionary organisation based in the UK, made up of local groups and individuals who seek a complete transformation of society, overthrowing capitalism, abolishing the state, getting rid of exploitation, hierarchies and oppressions, and halting the destruction of the environment. I'm Tim, and if everyone else could introduce themselves as well.
Yeah, I'm Nick.
And I'm Dick.
And I'm Jenny.
And I'm Vic.
So, going to talk about what's been going on in the UK. And particularly, we can start off, but we had the 4th of July recently, which, I mean, for any American listeners is a different day. But for us, it was the return to normal. Probably hear my air quotes there. So, what would everyone think about this? Pubs opening and things.
It was a continuation of the way the government started. It's basically returning to a policy of herd immunity. Make sure profit comes first and health lags a long way behind for us workers.
Yeah, they've stopped talking about herd immunity, haven't they? But they're probably still thinking about it.
The pubs and everything opened on the 4th, but almost immediately, they locked down Leicester because of a spike in cases. So it's clearly not gone away in the way that that we've been led to believe with the reporting, and they've stopped all the daily briefings and everything, as evidenced by Leicester being told to be in complete lockdown.
Since then, there's pubs that have closed, people testing positive. I mean,
straight away, pretty much.
It's going to hurt the businesses that it was meant to help. If someone gets tested and they have to shut the pub down again, they've invested all of that time and money into ordering all their stock back and getting the staff back. If they have to shut down again a week later, that's cost them a massive amount of money. So it's not really helping the businesses in the way that kickstarting the economy was supposed to. I don't know if anyone else saw, because this is probably more relevant for today, the packages that the Chancellor has announced.
Yeah, like the 50% off all meals eaten outside the home.
Yeah, Monday to Wednesday, yeah.
So that's weird.
It is. It's genuine.
I mean, this package they announced today, it doesn't really help
people
going back to work. It doesn't help the poor. Because, I must go restaurant and get 50% off. That ain't gonna happen, is it?
Exactly. And how's it working for businesses? Is it that they have to claim that money back?
They do, like, yes. A tax back. But there's gonna be a holiday, I think a 6-month holiday for stamp duty.
That's right.
Which is fine for people that own properties and are buying properties and for the housing market and so on, but it's not going to make renters feel good.
It's playing to their own demographic.
Wrong demographic, exactly.
Yeah.
If you're encouraging people and they don't have to spend so much, especially people that are buying, for instance, multiple properties, because I think it's up to £500,000, and the property that you're living in changes owners and they decide that the rent is different, you know, they can do whatever they want, really. There's not protections in place beyond the rent holiday that we've had, and you know, there's been a short ban on evictions, but that's going to be coming back
very soon.
I think possibly next month. So it is appeasing to one part of society, but it's not really the most needy, because
yes,
the poorest
I'm very
in society
to know that my landlord is now having to spend a little less money. Is he going to put my rent down? Probably not.
Shouldn't think so.
It's trickle down economics, isn't it? It's supposed to be if we can save money for the people at the top, then the extra money will make its way down.
It's partially that. There are also other things that have been introduced that have been a bit strange. Like there's been temporary measures in terms of the government will pay for apprenticeships to take place, which are not high paying areas anyway, but it's meant to be targeted at like school leavers and young people. And there's going to be a VAT cut. I think it's gone down to 5%, but just for hospitality. So it's generally an industry based or an industry targeted response to try and get certain. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with the arts and sort of culture industries, but clearly, because the UK is such a service-based economy, they have targeted the hospitality industry and the tourism industry to bring it back up. But in some ways, for people that were struggling before the virus hit, it's just putting a band-aid on the issues that have come about because of the economic crisis that has occurred. For people that are going back to the issues that they had before the coronavirus happened, it's not designed to help them.
No, and apprenticeships, I mean, there's no point in apprenticeships if there's no employers. The whole point of apprenticeships is you have to be employed. You have to find a firm that will sponsor you. It's academic, really, isn't it?
It's gestures, really. It's this kind of weird floundering, oh, well, we can pour some money into this and pour some money into that, just plugging holes as they, you know, as the water's coming in, trying to plug each hole with your thumb. They're trying to placate people, I think. It feels like it's just small concessions that they feel that they can give at this
point. It is partially that, yeah. And they are short-term, 6 month to 1 year things that they're planning. There's an interesting thing with, because everyone's been pushing for this Green New Deal, sort of like an FDR style, but environmental thing. They've announced that they'll give vouchers to lower income families to help out with fitting homes with insulation and for cutting carbon emissions in terms of electricity use and if it could be better in terms of its efficiency in electricity. So that's been good. But then on the other side of that, while they're introducing these types of things, they're also saying that our initiative to get the economy going again is going to be infrastructure, which will be done by removing the local council and local authorities' ability to say no to buildings being built on green belts and on protected sites. On the one side, I think it's a great idea. Fitting the insulation in houses creates jobs, and it's a good thing in the long run because we'll be using less power to heat our homes, things like that. If it helps lower income families, that's a good thing. They won't have to spend so much on their electricity bill. But it's not going to be a completely environmentally friendly approach if we're also going to be building brand new buildings on green belts.
Yeah. Although I think the build, which I think is what they termed the project, is a little bit smoke and mirrors. I think there's going to be very, very limited new build, and what's actually set aside for is considerable renovation, which was already on the cards before coronavirus. Yeah. Right. So it's kind of bullshit, really. Although undoubtedly there will be a certain amount of new build, but it will be unlikely to be social housing, for example.
Definitely.
Exactly. Luxury condos. Are they actually going to be affordable? Is there going to be effort into making sure that it's actually going to help people? Or is it just...
Well, this is what the housing minister's got in trouble for recently as well, because supposedly Jemrick worked around Tower Hamlets Council's planning permission rules to get him a £40 million discount, essentially, in terms of not paying his dues to the council. But it wasn't like social housing that he was building. It was luxury apartments.
That's right. The other thing to note is that it's been announced that the economy has shrunk by 25%. Which is quite phenomenal. So it's wiped out 18 years of economic growth. Now, wow. Johnson comes over as if he's a sort of second Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who brought in the New Deal after the big crash of the 1920s. But I'm not convinced that they're not going to introduce austerity. He says, oh no, Johnson talks about they're not going to bring about austerity. They're going to do this New Deal. But I'm not convinced by that. And I think there's people inside the government, people around Gove and Rees-Mogg, do want austerity.
Yeah, insane. After all this time, they're still talking about, you know, keeping it.
Well, it served them quite well. They're still in government. Nick, do you think it could be a case of simply waiting, because this is their first sort of look at a budget in terms of their first year of the Johnson government being in power? Do you think it could just be a case of waiting till we're a little way to the 5 years for them to announce slightly more austerity looking policies?
Yes, they might do that, but sooner or later they need to claw back what they've lost through the pandemic, all the profits they've lost through the pandemic. Whatever happens, the workers aren't going to do well out of this. Not going to do well out of this at all. If the economy is shrinking like it is, then there's going to be phenomenal unemployment. They probably, if not in the short term, but in the medium term, they'll be looking at cuts to our benefits. I mean, for example, they're talking about, well, no, they're not talking about, they're actually implemented in London. Young people up to the age of 18 were able to travel free. But now that's stopped. It's supposed to be a temporary measure. Also, people over the age of 60 were allowed to travel on the underground buses before 9:30. So they've stopped that. You have to travel after 9:30. And they say that's a temporary measure.
I think they've extended peak hours as well.
Yes.
In terms of you've got to pay more if you're traveling during a peak hour. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which I don't know if the reasoning was to try and get people to space out more on the trains, but your employer's not going to give you to, you know, tell you to come in 2 hours later, likely, to avoid your peak travel. Everyone's still going to be getting on the train at the same time. And where I live, I see a lot of on the earliest trains, it's often people working in construction that have to get to their jobs.
That's right.
So they start really early in the morning. They sort of work during daylight hours. So it's not going to make a difference to these people other than they're spending a bit more on their travel now, which day after day in a month, it really adds up on the
TfL. Really does.
It's quite our train services are quite expensive compared to other
expensive
first world countries.
Yeah, even with a rail card, it's just pretty prohibitive to jump around this country.
They're reintroducing that health workers have to pay for the car parking, and they're going to treat testing, all the testing is going to be treated as a perk, so they have to pay tax.
Actually, I heard about this, I think literally today, they caved on that one. And they're exempting, yeah, they backtracked on that one. They're exempting coronavirus testing.
That's a weird thing to try and introduce.
I think it's testing the water. They want to see where they can kind of go with stuff, you know, what people accept, what people won't accept.
Yeah, no, literally is that. It's testing the boundaries, isn't it?
It's throwing it to the wall, see what sticks. So they've had to reverse on a number of things recently. You'll remember the, in terms of people that aren't British citizens working in the healthcare services, having to pay for access to healthcare, and their families having to pay for access to healthcare, as everyone that isn't a citizen, they have to pay extra, even though they pay taxes. They have to pay on top of their taxes and their national insurance and everything.
It's a lump sum, isn't it?
Access. Yeah. Yeah, it is. I think it's every year they pay for it.
Yeah.
And they reversed on that. Apparently the government announced that they reversed on it, but then there's been countless stories of people are still having to pay for these things. You know, they're being told that they're getting a bill when they're in hospital, their families are being told there's a bill that they've got to pay and they're on a ventilator.
I don't think we can expect any support from the Labour government. They will be Her Majesty's loyal opposition to the Johnson regime.
Up here in Scotland, it appears that some employers, at least private sector predominantly, have kind of preempted the Scottish government, which is due to lift things similarly to as they were lifted on the 4th of July in England, in Scotland on the 15th of July. So just giving themselves a couple of weeks to see how things develop down south. I mean, the Scottish government's really capitalised on the crisis quite well. I think by using a more paternalistic approach to be heard as making the right noises and to be very able to distance themselves from the UK government, they've gained a lot of support and have reinforced maybe some wavering people as well. Really, Nicola Sturgeon can do no wrong for a lot of people up here. I mean, obviously, for some people, that's quite the opposite. They really hate her, and she's coming for some really horrific, misogynistic kind of abuse. Mm. But generally speaking, I think people have kind of been horrified by the UK government and feel that things are a whole lot better in Scotland, and they're likely to continue to be. But the reality is, of course, that, you know, it's just been a matter of timing. And as I say, a lot of people are going back to work before the 15th. So, for example, at peak time, the trains are pretty packed. And that's a massive difference. I mean, I was travelling on the trains during the lockdown, particularly in the last 3 weeks. And it was like one person per carriage. And I'm getting reports that it's standing room only at peak time now.
Yeah.
Now, everybody does have to wear masks and has had to wear masks for a while now. Not initially, but have for a while. But yeah, so I think the Scottish government can get away with quite a bit. Now, the reality is that I think per head of population, the massacre of people in care homes has been on just about the same level it has in the rest of the UK, in England and Wales. But that's kind of not being talked about.
I think it has been used by, I was watching a bit of the First Minister's Question Times in Scotland, and I think it has been brought up by the opposition parties. The Conservatives have brought it up quite a lot, but it has been very swiftly put to bed, I think, by Sturgeon, by the SNP, who are saying, we won't let this happen again. And the advice we've been getting from the UK government has been conflicting, and we're just sort of doing our best, given what a shit job they've been doing over there.
It's kind of what the Scottish government do generally, which is to blame Westminster for everything. And often Westminster is to blame, which is really handy for them. So, yeah.
So what you're saying is that this will probably accelerate the move to Scottish independence.
I think that's right, like, yeah.
Well, and the disintegration of the United Kingdom.
Well, it's definitely been brought up a lot in Northern Ireland, because I think the Irish, the Republic of Ireland's response was so different to Westminster's response. Obviously, they've got a border that they share, so it's definitely come up for Northern Ireland again.
It's quite stark. Actually, I don't really... What have they been doing? Have they been preventing travel over the border? Have they been sort of quarantining? No, they haven't, no.
No, that would be really, really very, very difficult to do.
Yes, yep.
It's an incredibly porous border. But things have not been as bad down south. There are obviously massive cities, you know, the Dublins and the Corks and so forth. But a lot of Ireland is semi-rural.
Yeah.
And the concentrations aren't there, which are helping to spread the virus in the same way.
Of course, Northern Irish independence would probably make the border situation a lot simpler, because that was one of the big things. I heard it explained very well.
Well, in terms of Europe and coming out of the EU, it would make it simpler. But I think for a lot of people living in Northern Ireland,
yes,
it would not make their lives simpler.
No, of course.
Well, it depends what you mean by independence. I mean, like an independent Northern Ireland.
That's true.
It's not...
Completely by itself.
It's a separate state. It's,
that kind of thing hasn't been in a kind of ether, as it were, for many years. But in terms of, you know, unification with the Republic is far more likely, given the shifts in demographic and so forth in the north.
So you really don't hear... There's so much sort of Anglo-centrism in the media about this. You know, here we only really hear about England, or, you know, I do. Maybe I'm looking in all the wrong places.
This is the whole thing with Westminster, though, isn't it? This is the reason that they have to have assemblies, because there is the complaint that everything is centred in Westminster and a lot of the decision making is centred there. I know that the First Minister for Wales has not been happy. He came out and said that he's had an utterly shambolic time speaking to the people at Westminster and speaking to Johnson's government. But I think that's what happens when you've got, especially with this government, it does seem everything's been very concentrated with the cabinet, and there's not even been any sort of discussion actually in the House in terms of what they're doing and what they're moving forward with. They just sort of announce things on TV.
Yeah, there does seem to be a lot of criticism from the civil service, for example, that, you know, decisions are being made like overnight on the back of a fag packet, mm-hmm. and then they're being kind of like hickledy-pickledy delivered, and then the civil service and everybody else has got to catch up with it all. No, it's an interesting culture, really. It's kind of, there's an element of almost, it appears, intentional chaos added to, you know, the generalised sort of incompetence. I think the government actually feels incredibly confident, because even making a real arse of the crisis, they're not going to face the electorate for another 4 years, potentially 4 years plus. So
I think something else comes into the mix, doesn't it? That's Brexit itself. And you've got to remember that Europe has caused the downfall of three Conservative prime ministers so far, you know, Thatcher, Cameron and Theresa May. I don't think things are that stable inside the Conservative Party. It could lead in the medium term to the overthrow of Johnson himself.
The thing is, when May had that snap election, she had far less seats than she had started with.
Yes.
It was very difficult to pass things through, whereas Johnson has a massive majority at the moment.
He did.
He can basically do whatever he wants, bar the House of Lords being involved.
But the economic fuck-up that's going to happen with Brexit, I mean, it's now he's got his way, it's going to be no deal, isn't it? And it's going to have a terrible effect on the economy, really, here. Along with COVID, it's just going to be massive.
Yeah, perfect.
That will aggravate the situation, yeah. Mm.
Perfect.
Nobody's talking about it at all.
No, everyone's forgotten about it. It was the big thing. Remember, you know, we're all like, oh, it's the only thing on the news. If only there was something else. And now there is something else. And I'm looking back fondly on the days when all we talked about was Brexit, to be honest.
I think the question is, I mean, there's no doubt that we're going to, at some juncture in the not too distant future, we're going to be hit with an austerity that is going to make what was in place between 2010 and, you know, 2017, 2018 look like nothing at all. I think that's inevitable. I mean, they will claw all this back. There's somebody counting up, you know, how much they've actually, in a sense, sacrificed to the plebeian masses. They're going to want their money back.
Yeah.
Big time. So the question then is, ultimately, I suppose, is what kind of nick is the working class movement in to respond to that? Now, obviously, you know, we don't feel that we can expect anything from the trade unions, particularly on a sort of a more generalised level. The trade union response to austerity was almost minimal. negligible. Yeah, so, you know, like one big demonstration, there's some violence and they stop. Yeah, and since then, like, you know, everything's been very, very sectionalised. It's very bitty and really no generalised struggle at all against austerity.
There are some struggles going on, aren't there? I mean,
undoubtedly, yeah. Yeah,
it's Hamlet.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true.
The Homerton Hospital, apparently, they've had some action.
Right, yeah, yeah. So it's like, so, you know, we have to kind of start building now to prepare for the inevitable. Yeah, so, you know, the question is, I suppose, really, is there something in the response to the crisis, like the mutual aid stuff and people coming together on a community level, that can feed into the development of a resistance? I'm not entirely convinced that there is. I think there might be elements that will help to sort of galvanise some sort of response to the imposition of austerity. But I think it's going to have to be coming from somewhere else. I think there's got to be like a different source, in a sense. And I think that source ultimately would have to be in workplaces, what remains of workplaces, but also in terms of unemployed organization.
Yeah.
And unemployed organizers, the organization of the unemployed and so forth, it's a very, very difficult area to organize in.
Yeah, far more difficult to organize in the workplace. Yeah.
Yeah.
It always has
And it always has been, although since the JSA, the Job Seekers Allowance and so forth, since, you know, way back then, it's been harder and harder with the kind of way that signing on and the way the claim and benefits and all the rest of it has been reorganized.
That's right.
Which has atomized claimants. They're already fairly atomized, but, you know, they could be reached, they could be brought together. Yeah. There were claimants unions and so forth, and that's kind of dissipated a great deal because of those.
Yeah, there's a few unemployed groups still around, but not many, not like they used to be. You're right, you know, that's got to be built somehow or other. I think there might be that these people who were drawn into the Labour Party, large numbers of people who are drawn into the Labour Party with Corbynism, now appear to be breaking with the Labour Party. You know, there's been thousands of resignations over the last week or so with the Starmer administration. You know,
I was one of them.
You know, generations who were radicalised to a certain extent. Okay, it was within a Labourist framework, but if more of them are breaking with the Labour Party, it's possible that they could move in a direction of extra-parliamentary and hopefully anti-parliamentary activity.
Yeah, well, that's how I got here. Yeah.
I think what's interesting with the unions is that, as far as I know, that most of the union officers are still working from home, which means basically they're not in a position to do anything. Think very much, and that, you know, where workers are getting angry in their workplaces, and they're actually being able to organise stuff themselves,
right?
Yeah,
without being controlled and blocked about by officers that would send them back to work. And I'm seeing whether that makes any difference, really, in the long term.
That's an interesting point. A very interesting point. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely happened in the Tower Hamlets dispute.
Yeah.
You know, people have had to like do it themselves, and like they haven't been working necessarily within the framework of the normal trade union practice, as it were.
I know we have a lot of membership in ASDA, and that our ASDA members are really, really pissed off with the way that they're being expected to work and the way that they're being brought back into work. You know, there's no safety in there. You know, there's no proper support for them from the union, as it were, from their officers. So, you know, they're going to have to make their own minds up, really, and start organising, you know, and that could be a very positive thing.
Yeah.
Mm. It ties quite well into our No Safety, New Work campaign as well.
Yeah.
We're sort of, you know, a big thing about that is the, you know, we're asking for people if they're not being protected by their unions. We're trying to hear from people in that situation.
Bear in mind that this Tower Hamlets is, it's all been implemented by a Labour council.
Yeah, yeah. Does anybody know what's happening in Homerton Hospital? Because I heard that there had been a walkout of...
I haven't heard about this. This is news to me. I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think it's the, you know, the domestics and porters and the...
ancillary workers.
That's the word I was looking for, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't used that word for ages since...
ancillary.
Hospital ancillary worker, yeah.
Mm. So you're talking about the HCAs and the healthcare assistants.
Yeah. The cleaners, you know. And
the porters and so forth.
I don't know what's actually happened or who's involved. It seems there has been a walkout and there has been...
It will, I think, have been a wildcat walkout as well, by the sounds of it.
Yeah. Well, it must have been, because all the officers are sitting at home twiddling their thumbs.
Well, so anyway, I think there's a few interesting things there that could, you know, be seeds of the development of a movement of opposition to this government and to austerity. So those are things worth looking at. That's what we've just been talking about in the workplaces, the mutual aid movement, and possibly people who are moving away from the Labour Party, like yourself, Tim.
Yeah.
You got here via the Labour Party.
Yeah.
I think what's also happened...
What was the last straw for me? I was so upset at Friday the 13th last December, you know, the general election. I was so upset and cross about that.
I was nearly in tears.
Yeah. I've not felt that awful. I mean, to be fair, you know, it was like December was a lot of different, like I just moved house as well. Moved into a completely new city.
You were in a vulnerable spot.
Yeah, I was vulnerable.
Prime for it.
I was going through a lot. But that was the last straw in many ways, shall we say. But no, just I think my faith in electoral politics was killed that day.
That was it.
I waking up after that, seeing not only, because I thought Corbyn was going to win. I genuinely didn't think that he was.
Aww.
I know, I actually did think he was. I was so surprised by not only...
It was a huge majority that they lost.
It was a huge majority.
Mm. Obviously, like, there was a lot of people that felt energised and suddenly newly engaged with politics because of the Corbyn experience.
Yeah.
Mm.
And people can go various ways after something like that happens.
Yeah.
After that kind of level of relative euphoria, given how politics have been for the last forever. But you can kind of, so there will be some people that will lapse into apathy and depression and that kind of stuff. There will be people that will be, you know, there's a campaign within the Labour Party to stay and organise.
That's it.
And there's a lot of people that, you know, genuinely feel that they can achieve something. I think it's the sort of... I don't know, it's a strange phenomenon, really, that people, you know, will keep sticking to, you know, this kind of Labour project, even when patently the Labour Party is not theirs. They can't have it. So, and there was a lot of illusions created about the fact that they could have it. And I think some people will kind of look for a alternative to the Labour Party that still remains within a social democratic framework.
Yeah.
A left social democratic framework, and they'll be looking around to see what's there. Some of them might drift towards the monstrous Workers' Party of Britain.
I think
very few. Yeah. Very few, I hope, but it's whether, which is always the case when, you know, there's been sort of periods of optimism and then disillusionment with anything, is what people who would consider themselves to be revolutionaries, how we can take advantage of that situation, how we can sort of say to people, well, you know, there is an alternative, there are different ways of doing it. And what in part that does is it kind of, it speaks perhaps to some of the sort of do-it-yourself, self-organising kind of ethos that maybe some people were starting to experience at some level within the sort of momentum movement. I mean, at the rank and file of it, not in the sort of bureaucracy and the political shenanigans that were going on, but, you know, people getting in kind of engaged with politics possibly for the first time, or being re-engaged in politics after a period of demoralization or whatever, and kind of want to continue in a politics that is about doing it yourself. I mean, but, you know, working with people, not being told from above, you know, what the line was and that kind of stuff. But the thing is, people have to be offered that. I mean, it's like not just the ACG, but the libertarian left in the broadest sense is very small. We're very used to speaking to each other and not speaking to a wider public as much as we should be. But one thing that I think has been interesting is, I think people have been speaking to each other across the divides, as it were, within the I won't say movement, but the scene, if you like. And people are starting to maybe be more open to joint activity and so forth. And again, that's something that we want to do with the
No Safety, No Work campaign.
And that's been because people can go to meetings without leaving their living room. Yeah. And it's sad but true, really.
Being able to meet, you know, I'm having a meeting every day of the week at this point. It's amazing that I'm able to do that and still.
I met neither you nor Vic physically yet.
Yeah, no, exactly. I haven't met any of you physically yet.
I don't know when that's going to happen.
I don't remember when I last saw a human being, to be honest.
Yeah. So I mean, it's something that's happened. People are speaking to each other that little bit more. People who would previously maybe not have made the effort. It's been facilitated to make it more easy or whatever with the old Zoom. Although Zoom is kind of horrible too in many ways.
Yeah, well, yes.
It's handy. It's convenient, and hopefully people will continue to do that in the real world scenarios as well, to some extent. But
especially for me, I'm an isolated member, so there's you know, so it's a lot easier for me. It would be even in the future, because getting into London from where I am is a bit of a faff. Mm-hmm. So, which is why I think remote meetings are pretty good.
Yeah, I think they're going to be a feature in the future.
I think so,
for sure.
I think also there's such a lot, since the collapse of Corbynism and all the rest of that, there's a lot of people knocking about who are really, really pissed off. And really pissed off with all the leaderships of the union. I mean, I know in the GMB, because we've had this business of Tim Roach, who's allegedly been raping and date rape and snorting cocaine and doing all sorts of other nefarious things, that, you know, it's widely publicised, and people are thinking, well, what the fuck? You know, that man's supposed to be defending us. He's supposed to be in charge of us. You know, he's supposed to be looking after us. I think there's a kind of really big feeling of disillusionment with all the leaderships. You know, it's how we can work with that so that people don't become just totally pissed off and couldn't give a fuck about any of it. And turn it into a sort of positive movement, really.
Now, where do you think the Black Lives Matter movement and also the environmental movement coming, you know, the XR people coming to it, because they're starting to organise actions again now, aren't they?
I've got something coming up, actually. I think in August they're doing a sit-in or something like that.
I think the Black Lives
Matter... Sorry, XR, BLM is not quite organised in the way that XR are, yeah.
But it's still been pretty significant, really.
It's been amazing. I went to a BLM protest a couple of weeks ago, and it was absolutely fantastic. There were so many people there. It was incredible.
Did anything come of it in terms of your more local governing bodies saying anything or committing?
I haven't heard anything from any of the local things, no. I mean, you know, a big thing is that obviously we've got the university here, which is white.
Where are you, Tim?
Cambridge.
All right.
So the university here is obviously coming up, has always come under a lot of fire for its admissions and makeup of staff. And yeah, I have heard absolutely nothing from them, or indeed from, you know, no statements from the police or anything like that. But generally it's been, going to that protest was very heartening.
I mean, I went to one as well in London, and I've also been keeping my eye on other things. Like this last weekend on the 4th, there was a trans rights protest in London that went to Parliament Square that were opposing there may be changes in terms of the way certain things are done for transgender people in terms of like getting medical assistance and all sorts of different things.
I think I heard about that.
Yeah, that might pass through. So that's come about as well. And there's clearly been backlash because there's been protests, there's been organised movements. I can't help but feel disheartened by these things because they are legislative things that are down to the government, and they've got a majority, so it does feel difficult to see these movements going anywhere in terms of action.
And I suppose the Black Lives Matter stuff, not necessarily the organisation Black Lives Matter, but the kind of the energy that's come out of that has emphasised direct action, obviously, hasn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a good thing.
Yes, and it's really good to see that.
So I think that there's always the dangers of people becoming oriented towards legislation, towards lobbying, towards becoming involved in the kind of the machinations of power. I mean, Extinction Rebellion, I mean, you know, some of them at least have launched a political party, haven't they, just in the last month or so, something called the Beyond Politics Party, which kind of is sort of, if Extinction Rebellion were going to launch a party, it would be called Beyond Politics.
True.
I think. But they had a year of like really quite exciting sort of dynamic, inventive, sometimes stupid direct action based protest, and obviously some of them, I suspect, all along had an idea that this was a kind of precursor to the establishment of a new political party. But I think that there was also probably some people who were never really particularly convinced that that approach, that direct action protest approach or whatever, was going to get them where they wanted to be. So, you know, that's why they've fallen in behind the Beyond Politics kind of party. But I don't really know if there's a place for that party, even within bourgeois politics.
I think that will lead to the fragmentation of XR.
You don't think?
I don't think there is a place for such a party within the British political scene.
We've got the Green Party, and that's about tolerated.
Do they still have one seat, or did they lose
it?
They've got Brighton.
They've always got Brighton.
They'll always have Brighton.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because this everything being online is almost, in a way, making it easier to organise, but harder to actually take action. Which is an interesting phase.
It existed. This issue existed before the crisis, but it's kind of become really sort of amplified.
Yeah.
Virus lockdown and stuff. But like, yeah, the danger is that we're like fantastic organisers on a virtual basis.
Yeah, they actually never do anything.
Yeah, and then when it comes to it, I know like people went out for the BLM stuff and people were doing protests, but it's going to take a hell of a lot more than protests. It's going to have to take proper, you know, long-term, dedicated, committed organisation in workplaces and communities and so forth.
Yeah. Right?
And, you know, I think some of the people, hopefully a small minority of the people, will just be like, well, I kind of liked doing it on my computer and it was fun. And like, I didn't really have to interact with people that are possibly going to be somewhat antagonistic to me initially.
Yeah.
I think this is the thing, you know, is that politics has to be out there and being done in the streets, in workplaces and stuff, because that's where it impacts. And although we can do lots of like behind the scenes stuff and we can communicate really, really well on the on the virtual front, you know, we cannot change the world virtually. We can change the virtual world, but we cannot change the world virtually. Yeah.
Having said that, though, I think it's worth saying for people that may be listening and they're thinking of joining, there is always going to be space for good organisation, and good organisation is so important.
But oh, yeah.
You're definitely right that the organisation does not a revolution make. We still have to be going out there.
Well, undoubtedly, like, there'll be some people whose forte is kind of doing stuff in terms of outreach on a virtual level, right? And people that do all the kind of behind the scenes stuff. And although I would hate to see a kind of a real division of labour within the ACG or any organisation, I don't think that would be healthy. I think you're going to have a tendency that some people will prefer to be a little bit more behind the scenes. Maybe some people, because of the situation in which they find themselves, you know, health-wise or whatever it might be, that's best for them.
Yes, yeah?
And
yes.
They can make their contribution to the revolutionary struggle, you know, sitting in their living room.
I think that's the beauty of it, is that, you know, you it is actually possible for us to when we all come together. It's the fact that we're all together and some of us can go out and do actual physical actions means that even if one of us by ourselves can't, you know, leave the flat for whatever reason, when we all come together like this, every single person can actually help and make a difference by virtue of working together and being able to interface and organise with people that can do that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I do feel that in a lot of ways it's made our organisation more cohesive.
Yeah.
Another thing that we could put in the mix is, I think there's going to be a hell of a lot of people who are going to get evicted. You've got to think about anti-eviction gatherings, you know, anti-eviction movements to stop large numbers of people turning out. I think
it's very powerful as well. I think, you know, if you can turn up and stop people being evicted.
It's such an important thing, actually, because that, you know, one of the main reasons I started leaning this way politically in the first place was because of homelessness and evictions and you know, housing. And the housing struggle was sort of the main factor for me initially looking into this kind of thing. And so I think evictions is sort of, for me personally, it feels like it begins and ends in eviction struggle and fighting against homelessness and housing crises.
I think it's another thing that, as we've said, with the austerity measures that are probably going to be introduced and the economy looking the way it is with COVID and with Brexit, I think evictions are going to be one of the most disruptive things to come out of that.
And there is action, you know, certainly in Glasgow, where the Living Rent campaign are very active. I mean, there's action tomorrow, actually, and that'll be ongoing against eviction, because it's started already.
Mm.
You know, we've got a lot of slumlords in Glasgow, so, you know, there's, well, as anywhere, but, you know, there's particular concentrations in certain areas, and you know, they're undoubtedly some ruthless, landlords, so they haven't let the pandemic get in their way particularly.
I think that's all we've got time for today, I'm afraid. If our listeners want to find out more, please check out our website, www.anarchistcommunism.org. Like our page on Facebook at facebook.com/anarchistcommunistgroup, and follow us on Twitter using the handle anarcommunists. That's anarcommunists. Bye.
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 Bye.